This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:17. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. Up next, Nagendran Dharmalingam is scheduled to be executed in Singapore next Wednesday. We're talking about the final efforts to stop this.
We've talked about this before on the show, so just to run through the basics again, right? Nagendran's 34, and he's scheduled to be executed in Singapore next week. He was sentenced to death in 2010 for trafficking heroin into Singapore in 2009. And, you know, Singapore famously has among the world's toughest narcotics laws. He was actually supposed to be hanged on November 10 last year, but the court was told that he had tested positive for COVID-19 when he appeared in a last-bit appeal against his death sentence. And I think a huge part of this conversation has been the appeal against Nagendran's execution, focusing on the claim from his lawyers that he is intellectually disabled.
And this is really... over the course of the nearly 1 year, I want to say, amassed a lot of support. There's been a petition that gathered upwards of 100,000 signatures. There's also been multiple calls to stay the execution. So essentially now it is set to happen next week, and we're looking at the last stretch of people seeing what can be done. In terms of what can be done, a couple of options that are being looked at, there is word that there is some effort legally to see whether whether a retrial is possible. There's also talk of trying to get a presidential pardon from Singapore President Halimah Yacob. There's a petition under change.org that is looking to garner more signatures. So it's a very sad story. And I think just people hoping that it wouldn't come to an even sadder end. We're going to speak very shortly with Dobby Chu of the Anti-Death Penalty Asia Network. But what are your thoughts? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Dobby Chu, Executive Director of the Anti-Death Penalty Asia Network. Dobby, thanks for being with us today.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
What can you tell us about where things currently stand with Nagendran and what the remaining options are?
So we are kind of at this end of the road right now. I think legal challenges has been exhausted, and the judiciary in Singapore and the public prosecution has made it very clear that no lawyers should try. They have fined lawyers so far up to $35,000, which is almost 100,000 ringgit. And that is still being worked out with the lawyers and the judiciary and public prosecution, how much that would finally entail. So the judge has suggested that the next step is for there to be clemency. To pursue clemency, for this to be resolved via clemency. So that's what we are trying to. That's where we are trying to head to it right now. But that is also, again, has been rejected on 31st March, and we have no idea whether there's going to be any review to it. So the only options we have left on the table is to convince the Malaysian government to make overtures to Singapore counterpart to bring Nagendran home as part of this what we call international prisoner transfer.
So there was some talk of a fresh trial, right, because of an alleged conflict of interest in the judgment. What can you tell us about this?
Well, personally, I think Singapore is a very small country. So conflict of interest in that sense happens a lot because there's not a very big bench. If you look at the judiciary website, it's a very small appeal bench compared to what we have in Malaysia, where we have at least 13 federal court judges and a complete separate court of appeal judges. And I don't think the Singapore judiciary is going to entertain this angle of approach, because last time we look at the co-jabbing execution in 2016, we raised the same concern that the same judge has presided over multiple appeals and he has said no in multiple appeals. That same judge continued to hear the case and eventually ruled against it, and co-jabbing was executed immediately after he finished his trial. So I think looking at the Singapore's precedent, they're not going to be interested in entertaining this angle. But I think what is very important, that why Surendran and Lawyers for Liberty are pointing out at his lawyer, is because the death penalty is the most severe punishment. And for most severe punishment, there should be an equivalent rigor to determine whether a person is guilty or innocent. And when you have something like this that can cast a big doubt that this person have potentially decided or acted in a way that enabled his prosecution and now decides on his final verdict, it leaves a bad taste in everyone's mouth, right? So I think that's something that should be really highlighted and pointed out to them.
So you mentioned earlier about the clemency, but there do seem to be attempts still to seek a presidential pardon. Could you explain what this involves? Is that something to be optimistic about?
I want to say yes, but honestly, no. The presidential power there is very different from what we have in Malaysia. In Malaysia, our king, our ninth sultan, and the governor essentially has almost full discretion on how they issue clemency. Whereas in Singapore, it's a very regimented process. If there is a clemency appeal, the president is supposed to instruct the cabinet to come up with an advisory on it. Cabinet will reach out to the attorney general, who will compile a report that includes a report from the trial judge, the person who heard the case, the appellant judge who heard the appeal, the attorney general himself, before cabinet make a decision based on that. So if you want to say, you know, we are appealing to them, we're essentially appealing to people who has convicted Nagendran, either by the judiciary itself or the prosecution, who is vested in securing that conviction, advising the cabinet, who has not been very sympathetic in the past 30 years, to grant clemency. So personally, I'm not very hopeful in that sense, because these are the people who want him to be on death row, who has essentially staked their reputation saying he is guilty and he should be on death row. So expecting them to suddenly change around and say, I will grant him clemency, is very unlikely. I had some hope when I saw the hearing that they pointed out that this is not a matter to be resolved in court of law, but in the clemency process. But with the last rejection on 31st March, it leaves a lot to be asked for, I think.
The last time you were on with us, you spoke about how Singapore doesn't acknowledge that Nagendran is not a fit mind to be sent to trial. Since then, how much of this has been taken into account in making this decision and having all these things happen?
I think officially Singapore has not acknowledged that Nagendran is a person with disabilities and should be cared for as such. I think they're still taking a very staunch position that he is fit, he is aware of what he's doing, and we are executing him in line of our law. But looking at the last judgment that came out on 29 March, to me, I think they're starting to realize that they are on the wrong trajectory. Because when you look at the judgment, essentially, they avoided all responsibility on deciding. Essentially, the whole issue of whether Nagendran was in the right state of mind, whether he is suffering from psychosis, they completely bypassed that argument and that concern and say, hey, his brother is not a good witness. He's an interested party. So we can't rely on his evidence. But at the same time, they say the prison warden, who is part of the government, is a fair person to comment to say that he's fine. So to me, I think the fact that they are not willing to directly stick their name there and say, yeah, I think he is fit for execution and actually address the issue head on, to me means that there's a creeping sense of doubt in their mind and they know this. Whether they'll act on it, that's a big question mark then.
There has been significant attention given to this in Singapore. You know, vigils were held, petitions are being circulated. Has this changed the sentiment around this case and in a larger sense around death penalty in Singapore?
I would think so. So Singapore had quite a historic gathering of 400 people at their speaker's corner. And Singapore, you know, if you protest outside, even if one person holding a poster, you can get arrested and charged. We have had friends that went to jail for this. And people are not usually willing to criticize the government's actions so openly. So having 400 people gather out there that way, it's a big message to Singapore government that this isn't something people agree with. That the kind of courage that people have to step up is definitely a change. And I think what really, this case really made an impact is how people perceive the death penalty. Because every time, you know, there's a death penalty case, advocates like me or lawyers will say, there are concerns, right? Whether the person is innocent, maybe he was on drug, whether he's drugged or whatever it is, there's reason to cast doubt as to whether he's fit to execute. And people will just say, no lah, that's what if lah. If someone like that comes to the system, there'll be ways to make sure they won't get executed. It won't happen one lah. That's always the argument you hear, right? Because we want to have this idealistic image that if it's death penalty, only the bad people gets executed. And when you have a Nagendran case like this, where you can point out to all the evidence, he is not fit to be executed, and the system still insists on executing him, it paints a very different image of the death penalty. And I think it forces people to think. I think even for us, when we reach out to talk to people, we expected resistance. And surprisingly, everyone was like, yeah, if it's not fit to execute, it was intellectually disabled or challenged, why should he be on death row in the first place? He is not the kingpin drug lord that people want, right? He's a small guy that was exploited. So I think it really changes the perspective. And it's very important that people see this once again, that the death penalty is not a good thing. It's problematic.
Is there anything that the public can do at this point?
I would say speak up. Right now, what we're trying to do is we're trying to convince the government from Malaysia's side to really request for him to be returned via prisoner transfer. And I think having more public comments saying that, you know, Nagendran's case shouldn't be there. It shouldn't be on death row in Singapore when he's intellectually disabled or challenged. He should be brought back to Malaysia. I think that message is very important. And I know it's very hard for Malaysians to talk about death penalty. It's always a very 50-50 issue. Studies in the past, you know, 30% support abolition, 30% wants the death penalty, and everyone else in between is like, I don't know what I want. And I think most of the time, rather than going into argument with people over something that's so ethereal that it doesn't affect your daily life, it's easy for us to want to avoid a hard conversation, right? But I think right now, when we look at Nagendran's case, it's very important that people speak up, have that conversation. Because right now in Malaysia, we are not executing and we have not executed anyone for the last 4 years. It doesn't mean we will keep that forever. Malaysia still has death penalty in our laws. Singapore still has death penalty in their laws. And there's a lot of Malaysians on death row there. And all these people, all of them in their own ways, have small little problems that why they shouldn't be executed in the first place. And I think it's important to have that conversation now. Talk to people and let them know, if you don't think the death penalty is right way forward, why? Nagendran's case is a good example. Because if the worst come to be and Nagendran is executed next Wednesday, he's not the only one to suffer from intellectual disability on death row. Like right after Nagendran's case, we had this case of palsy. He also has a significantly low IQ that falls between the threshold. They are not the only one. There's countless more in Singapore and God knows how many more in Malaysia, right? So we haven't even looked at Malaysia yet. And that's a big question that we should have, a conversation that we should have. And I think that's where we should start and what people can do. Even if we can't do more to save Nagendran right now, I mean, of course, I hope we can. Think of the next guy down the line. They are not the final one. As long as death penalty is around, there's always the next guy that we need to fight to protect.
Dobby, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you for having me on air.
That was Dobby Chu, Executive Director of the Anti-Death Penalty Asia Network, weighing in, giving us the latest update on the case involving Nagendran in Singapore, who faces execution next week. And you know, there are some last stretch attempts being made to stop this. If you'd like to sign that petition, it's available on change.org. Just look for Pardon the Death Sentence of an Intellectually Disabled Man. If you'd like to weigh in, you can WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.